Welcome to Your Own Health and Fitness. I'm health integrationist Lena Berman with Jeff Fawcett, PhD, and we come to you weekly with a critical, independent voice on the politics and practice of health. Just as articles and news stories abound about the mounting evidence that cell phones have health consequences, our public utilities are installing new meters on our homes and businesses using the same technology. Whoa! Now, this is a health show, so I won't even be concentrating on the extreme privacy breach these meters represent as they report on your activities inside your home, your energy use, what equipment you're buying and using, and whether you're compliant about turning stuff off during peak hours. No, I won't be talking much about how this information will be used and who it will be shared with. I also won't be talking about how easy it will be for hackers to learn all kinds of information about you, like when you're away from home, or whether they can mess with your bills, or whether terrorists will be able to drop the entire energy grid. No, this is a health show. I'm going to concentrate on what we already know about the health effects of low-level, constant exposure to wireless radiation, which is the only option for these meters. Not because there aren't other options that will eliminate the security risks and health risks, because there are other wired options, but right now customers aren't getting to have them, even if they have medical implants or devices that will be interfered with by this technology. I don't know, does this metering sound smart? Join us for an update on what we know about the health effects coming our way. First, an editorial about this week's health news by Jeff Fawcett, PhD.
Thank you, Lena. Every night before turning out the lights, I read something. Usually it's a short story or a chapter in a novel. Right now, though, I'm working through two nonfiction books, the classic A Natural History of the Senses by Diane Ackerman and the more recent Proust Was a Neuroscientist by Jonah Lehrer. Both humanize the science that describes how we experience the world. In A Natural History of the Senses, we are treated to the poetry of our experience. Another book I read recently, Action and Perception by Alvin Noe, puts it this way. Perception isn't something that happens to us, it's something we do. In Proust Was a Neuroscientist, we are treated to the way in which artists have accurately portrayed how we experience the world well in advance of the neuroscience that describes it. The work of artists such as Walt Whitman, George Eliot, Igor Stravinsky, Gertrude Stein, and of course Marcel Proust, are examined for their insights in comparison to recent scientific discoveries. To some, this might look too much like Me Too, in which the poetry of Walt Whitman is supposed to have said the same thing as the science of Antonio Damasio about our body as the origin of our emotions. So why was Damasio's work news? And since we now have Damasio, who needs Whitman? If you have the neuroscience, who needs the art? There are two answers that are extremely important. The first is that the science doesn't illuminate the experience as you feel and think your way through it. The science is about people as objects. Its knowledge is about bodies, not your body. In other words, it's only half the story. The science is fascinating, or perhaps not. For example, that the brain structure called the ventromedial prefrontal cortex, which is just behind your eyebrows, is used in making decisions, in particular, moral judgments. To paraphrase the philosopher Ludwig Wittgenstein, fascinating though the science might be, how does this help us live better lives? That brings me to the second answer to the question, if you've got science, who needs art? In Too Much Medicine, Not Enough Health, we discuss in the context of consumption decisions the core capacity of humans for mind reading. I'm not talking about the Vegas Lounge Act variety, although it's in the family. I'm talking about our ability to understand the intentions of others by such things as what they say, how they say it, what is written on their face, and what their body language is telling us. Of great interest is that the intention registers emotionally and eventually bubbles up into our awareness. A few days ago, the New York Times ran an article that describes a new movement in literature departments. Some literary scholars have discovered how neuroscience sheds light on works of fiction and the act of reading. There's one strand of the movement that uses neuroscience as a literary theory. The other, and to me more interesting strand, uses neuroscience and literature to illuminate each other. At the core of this strand is an appreciation for our capacity to read minds as an essential aspect of how we learn and how we get on in the world itself. In other words, when we read, we're exercising our capacity for mind reading, and we all know that exercise is good for you. Next week, Science Magazine will publish an article about the effectiveness of social learning, that is, learning by observing others, which, of course, includes mind reading. The research demonstrates, in a small way, why learning what to do by observing and imitating others beats trial and error learning hands down. The most successful strategy in social learning is observation of others balanced with taking action based on what's been learned. From other research, we know that social learning is impaired when mind reading is impaired. Remember the ventromedial prefrontal cortex and its role in moral judgment? Last week, the journal Neuron published research on the effect of damage to this structure. There are two aspects of moral judgment that interested the researchers. First, judgment of another's intention, that is, mind reading, and second, judgment as to what happened. What the study found is that when the ventromedial prefrontal cortex was incapacitated, so was the capacity for mind reading. Next week, some of the same researchers will publish a study in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Science that looks at another area of the brain and its effect on moral judgment. The researchers found that disruption of this area of the brain, the right temporoparietal junction just above and behind your right ear, also caused loss of the capacity for mind reading. The incapacitating method used is of interest. They exposed the area to a magnetic field applied just about where you'd hold a cell phone. The principal message I want to leave with you is this. Engagement with stories builds your capacity to read minds. The more complex the story, the more it builds your capacity. And that is why literature departments are essential for your health. A transcript of this editorial is available on the blog at yourownhealthandfitness.org. I'm Jeffrey Fawcett. Take care of yourself.
Jeffrey Fawcett is an environmental economist, writer, and health educator who produces this show with me and is primary author of our book, Too Much Medicine, Not Enough Health, and there is a Facebook page for that, as well as a Facebook page for Your Own Health and Fitness. Now to our topic for today, Smart and Unhealthy. And our guest, Cindy Sage, who is owner of Sage Associates, a nationally renowned environmental land use consulting firm specializing in the assessment of factors that affect the suitability of land for conservation and for development. She's an expert in translating complex technical and scientific information for the public and decision makers. Her specialty area of practice is the effect of electromagnetic fields. She provides environmental monitoring, EMF site assessment, and EMF policy evaluations for electric transmission line and wireless antenna cell tower projects. She's founding member of the Environmental Defense Center in Santa Barbara. Ms. Sage is one of the first faculty in the Environmental Studies program at UC Santa Barbara and developed and taught classes there. She was appointed by the Governor of California to the Board of Registration for Professional Engineers. She's co-author of the co-editor of the Bioinitiative Report, which is a collection of 14 scientific papers by global researchers and public policymakers and their suggestions for lowering allowable limits for wireless exposures. Welcome back.
Hi, Lena. It's really good to be back.
I wish it was under better circumstances. You know.
Well, just when you think you've sort of got a fix on the world that you live in, something comes along like smart meters and throws us all a real curve. So I think it's an important topic for today's show.
One of the things I think we might want to be clear about before we get into this is that there are phases to this rollout that they're doing. And the first phase, which is what we're in, is that people are getting new meters.
Right.
And the new meters, as far as I can tell, are not live yet. So it's really not very easy to tell for a number of people who have new meters what it's going to be like to have this new technology.
Right, yeah. And I know you've had a program on smart meters already, and some of your audience may have a bit of background, but you know, the it's true these are being rolled out. The meters are being swapped out for the existing old meter on your wall, where the meter reader used to come and read how much electricity you had used during the month. But maybe you know, to start, I'd just like to say that for those of you that don't know what a smart meter is yet, everyone in California essentially who has electric service, at some point in the next few years, will very likely have a new wireless electric meter installed on wherever your old one is. And the utility will come around and do that, or they'll have a work group to do that, and they'll take your old one away. And it's meant to be a residential energy management tool. The idea behind smart meters was to provide for energy consumption changes by homeowners. So you can either, choose to do your laundry and your dishwashing at off-peak hours and pay a little less, or you can use less energy overall, or so the thinking goes. If you knew what you were using, you might be able to do a better job of managing your use. But what's happened in the evolution of the program is that all of these meters, rather than being hardwired, which we wouldn't worry about in terms of potential health effects and some of these other consequences, they're not coming wired. They're coming wireless. And that means they're going to have substantial radio frequency and microwave radiation emissions in patterns that we have never experienced before. And so, Lena, part of what I wanted to talk about today is I want to give people a picture of what this is like and why it's different, and where it's what parts of your life it will affect, and what you can and can't do about it.
Well, we'll be interested to hear about that. I also note that various reports coming from, the information coming from the utilities, and even the EPRI report on EMF health assessment and RF is like dinosaur age. It's like back to the dinosaurs in terms of the information. They're still talking about heating effects. And we know now from all of your great work and all the other people associated with you that you don't have to feel warm to be getting a very substantial exposure and effect from all of this.
Yeah. Well, the health effects are very controversial, but I'll tell you what. I've been working on smart meters about 4 months. I started in November, and I was trying to understand and get factual information from the utilities about what these are about. What kind of emissions do they have? Are they like a cell phone? Are they, are they like a little cell tower? What are they? And we want good, solid information, first of all, before we should even be talking about health effects. And it's been extremely difficult to get comprehensive information on the meters from Southern California Edison, from PG&E, from SDG&E. And we have been working, to do that. And I'm going to be reporting today on what we know so far and what we're still waiting to see. But even with a sort of uneven radio frequency emissions information we have so far, we can make some predictions about health consequences and not just health, but there are very substantial other concerns that I at least want to list at some point, and they include invasion of privacy, the risk of personal information, billing and banking and so on these wireless networks that we don't know are well encrypted. There are great issues with the reliability. It appears that some of these are prone to affect your electrical wiring system in your home, and in some cases appear to have led to residential electric fires, and in one case, an explosion of the meter. In addition to the increased vulnerability to hacking, so your private information may be made available to others, there's the increased risk of planting of malicious software on networks, which happens now, and we just don't know what kind of security is being put into place to prevent this. There's certainly going to be security risk introduced when you're away from home in terms of burglaries, because anybody going by with a Wi-Fi detector or wireless detector is going to be able to tell if your energy usage, which is streaming out every single minute, is going to be lower than normal. The area of interference with critical care equipment or medical equipment used in the home is one where we have great concern, and we can talk more about this, but there's evidence to indicate that these radio frequency pulses are so strong as they go on and off that they may actually cause the malfunction of things like wireless insulin pumps or pain pumps or ventilators. So these are all, it ought to be serious concerns, and there ought to be a public dialogue about these. But the one that really gets people hopping mad, and this is happening in PG&E territory, where they've had these meters out and operating for a while, so they're actually working. There are just enormous overcharges for electricity. People have reported doubling and tripling of their normal monthly bills as compared to a month last year, the corresponding month. So these meters with their radio frequency pulses actually report that you're using more energy than you are.
PG&E is saying that the old meters weren't accurate and that this is accurate. We also
know they're now collecting fairly.
Yeah, it has to do with the customer's usage. It's not them. But the other story that we know about is someone who works for a large firm that has different offices, and one of their offices received a smart meter that had the old information was still on the meter, so they received, I don't even remember the number, it was in the thousands and thousands of dollars, you know, a bill that was because the other information hadn't been wiped. Speaking of public forums, I just want to announce that Jeff Fawcett, a PhD, and I are going to be joined by Cindy Spatt of TURN and some representatives from PG&E and the CPUC in a discussion, a possible debate. We're representing the citizens. This forum is organized by Sonoma County Supervisor Ephraim Carrillo, and it will be taking place on Wednesday, April 21st, 2010, from 5:30 to 7:30 in Sebastopol. The relevant information will be on our site, and there'll be a link. You can also find information at emfsafetynetwork.net.
Dot org. emfsafetynetwork.org.
I really should have that branded on the inside of my eyes by now. So,
and that kind of public discussion is really needed in every community, because people, you know, there are so many issues that people have to worry about today that, you know, adding on one more is a burden. And there is simply no way for an individual to get the kind of information that will be presented at that meeting out to the general public, so people can try to figure out whether or not they're going to be particularly vulnerable, or if they're going to have to ask the utility to opt out because they have specific medical or health concerns and so on.
So far, there's no opt-out, so we're working on that. But
mm-hmm. Well, actually, Lena, there does appear to be an opt-out.
Ah.
And I can talk about that now or later, but there are two things. There are two things to say. One is that some opt-out letters that simply represent homeowner reaction to this idea have been developed and do appear on the
EMF Safety Network.org
website. If you're, no matter what your utility area that you're in California, if you go to the website, you'll most likely be able to find a letter that you can click and send, and it says to the utility, I don't want a smart meter. I have objections to having that kind of wireless intrusion in my house on my property, and I am telling you I don't want one. Now, that's simply an expression of intent to comply or not comply with the program.
It doesn't have any
standing, but I'll tell you what does have standing. Mm-hmm. If you look at, as I did, the Pacific Gas and Electric Company Advanced Metering Infrastructure Semi-Annual Assessment Report, and it's dated January 2010. It's a report that the California Public Utilities Commission told PG&E it had to submit, and it addresses a lot of these customer concerns. And one of the things it says is that if a homeowner finds that they have radio frequency interference with some electronics in their home, they can ask to have that swapped back out. They can ask to have that meter removed. And so that does appear to be a window in.
So this is if it's already on your house and you're having circuit interruptions and surges that trip your wiring system or GFIs and stuff.
Well, it doesn't say what kind of RF interference is covered, but certainly if you're experiencing radio frequency interference as a result of these very, very strong but short you know, very short pulses of radio frequency that the meters are emitting about once, well, we don't know how often, probably once a minute, then there is a way that, for now at least, they'll work with customers to have those removed or deactivated from the wireless aspect. And that's good news because there are going to be lots of people, depending on where their meter is located in relation to their occupied space in their home. If it's right on a bedroom wall, it couldn't be worse because these emissions will come right through into that room and probably through the next room and the next room or on the kitchen or any place that you spend a lot of time.
Well, there's something we need to clarify. PG&E, when you talk to them, if people are outraged listening to a show, they get on the phone, if they actually manage to get a customer service person, which is difficult, what they will tell you is that these are very, very, very small exposures, and they're not discussing the fact that in neighborhoods there will be antennas, there will be repeaters, and there will be signals bounced from house to house. So when I first saw the report that was written about this, the expansion phase two and what it's going to be like, I showed it to some IT specialists that live in our neighborhood, and they just stood very slowly reviewing the map of how the structure is going to work, the infrastructure with the bouncing signals and the antennas, and they slowly shook their heads and said, I don't want this. For a variety of reasons. So the intensity of the signal is not just coming from the meter itself. It's coming from the network, and that's where they're not discussing it.
Yeah. If sometime when we don't have to take a break to interrupt the flow, I would really like to lay out for people all the layers of wireless radio frequency radiation that go with this entire system.
Well, you've got 10 minutes until we break again.
Yeah.
So
all right.
You
here, for the folks out there who are saying, I can't wrap my head around what this is even about yet, what I'd like to do is to talk about the big pieces of this system and how they work together. In communities, you have cell sites. You have wireless antenna sites already, and that's for, use of your cell phone, and it's for voice and data transmission. We're going to need a whole lot more of those. We're probably going to need antennas to transmit these energy reporting signals around communities every couple hundred feet. And the way a lot of communities are putting that first layer in, now this is the overarching, the umbrella layer of radio frequency, is to go to the communities and put up little antennas on utility poles or lighting poles or electric poles throughout communities, one every few hundred or maybe every few thousand feet. So the first thing we're going to see is an enormous surge of radio frequency in communities up at pole level related to, how those signals are going to get back to the network and to the utility. And then on every home, every classroom, every building with electricity, try to think of one that doesn't have it, the meter that's on your wall now that reports your energy usage for your house will be replaced with a wireless meter, and that wireless meter will emit bursts of radio frequency radiation that are extremely high, but they're very short in duration. So they're great big pulses that go on and off, on and off, on and off. And these are so powerful, they'll go through walls, through rooms, basically throughout your property. The way that the numbers are coming to us, and these are reliable numbers done by industry consultants who are reporting back, to utilities about how they'll operate. The only way they're legal, Lena, is that the way we govern public safety limits is to average out the amount of power being put out over a long period of time. And if it doesn't violate that, fine. But that really dumbs down numbers. We have no standards in place to address the way this signal is delivered, and that is these enormous pulses of radio frequency, sort of almost like a radar kind of exposure that go on and off, and the traffic or the amount of time that these meters have to sort of check in with the house to see what's going on is probably one a minute or more frequently. That's 1,440 in a 24-hour period. A normal cell phone might emit a radio frequency radiation emission level of 300 microwatts per centimeter squared, just picking an average. These pulses, according to Southern California Edison's projections for the peak power, the instantaneous power of the pulse, is 230,000 microwatts per centimeter squared. So they're not just like cell phones, although you could make them look like that if you time averaged out the amount of power over 6 minutes or 30 minutes or some longer period. So the first thing to know is these are pulses, and they don't just carry through airspace, but they couple with your electrical wiring. So the wiring in your home and the metallic water pipes, sewer pipes, gas lines, all will carry and re-radiate that signal. But we are not done. We are not done. We can say we don't know a lot about traffic patterns. We know your meter is reporting on your own home usage, but you've also mentioned that it can piggyback the signals from other people's houses that live around you back up to the cell tower or the cell antenna if they don't have a good line of sight. So the traffic is not only your radio frequency signal traffic, but your neighbors around you as well. At least that's a possibility. So that's two big new layers of pervasive radio frequency in communities, in homes. And there is a third, and this is where it becomes interesting and voluntary. Everything so far is involuntary, and you can't do much about it. But what you can do is not to take that, introduce that third level of radio frequency that comes with the system, and that is the utilities will soon be asking you, once you have your smart meter, to go around and put little power transmitters, one on every appliance that you want to have energy reporting on back to the utility. These little power transmitters by themselves emit large amounts of radio frequency radiation within the zone around them. And so if you have three or, you know, you might have 10 or 12 in your house, but they'll be concentrated in your kitchen and maybe in your home office, dishwasher, washer, dryer, heater, air conditioning, and so on. And so then what you have done inside your house is add a whole nother series of power transmitters, each burping up its radio frequency burst back to your smart meter, which then is going to the nearest cell tower or antenna. The difference here is that you don't have to install those if you object to the radio frequency that would be involved in doing those things. Down the road, Blake Leavitt and others think that, you know, there'll probably be a federal mandate that all new appliances come with these RF power transmitters built into them, and you can't take them apart and decommission the antenna inside without violating the warranty on your refrigerator or, you know, whatever it is, and that remains to be seen. But for now, what you don't do if you choose not to is to join the program and opt in with the utility to have that kind of energy reporting back through their system with the increased radio frequency that would engender. So that's the way the system works so far as we can tell. And I've already written to the Federal Communications Commission to say, hey, wait a minute, I just took a photograph of a multifamily condominium near where I live, and it's got 8 electric meters and 8 gas meters on the same wall. How could you possibly put that many smart meters on somebody's wall, you know, taking care of the electric and the gas wireless emissions for the entire building? Because that would have to, that's going to be such an enormous amount of RF traffic that has to violate standards. So what are you doing there? And, basically, I think we're in a situation where this entire radio frequency wireless concept for smart meters got ahead of logical thinking. And again, we're talking health and RF emissions, but we have all of these other, you know, privacy, security, critical care equipment, fire, hacking issues to deal with. And it just seems like, PG&E should not have rolled out 2.6 million meters as it already has without some testing.
Well, and in fact, they finally just recently admitted that they hadn't done proper testing. So mm-hmm. There's been some admission, and Senator Flores is taking them to task for this. So there may be some hearings. But one of the things that you've pointed out that I just want to clarify is that there's an exponential increase in your exposure because you're part of a net of other houses. So you're getting not only just your own, but other people's radio frequency as well. And that's not, you know, we haven't, the whole phase two hasn't been rolled out yet. It hasn't been put into hasn't been totally installed, so we don't have any idea from independent measurements what that's going to be. We just know it's going to be huge. Also, people do not have the option of opting out, and when we confronted...
With the meters, that's right.
Right.
With the meters.
Well, you can... Well, but if you get a meter, you're part of the net. Whether you have antennas in your house, you're still part of the net. And when confronted on that, what they said was that the wired option was too expensive, and I just want to say, before we go to break, that because Google has discovered that the fastest broadband is wired fiber optic to the curb, as they do in many other countries, including Japan, now other companies, including our local Sonic, I know, is wanting to do this, and other companies are getting on board, and they want to do fiber optic to the curb to give people this lightning to the home,
mm-hmm.
to the home,
yeah.
not to the curb.
Mm-hmm.
They want to do this lightning fast fiber optic option, which is, you know, safer, et cetera, for so many reasons. If that goes in, the infrastructure will be there for the meters to report their data on the fiber optic. So, their argument that, and also I've heard from other companies like Verizon that putting in a cell tower is $500,000. So how this is cheaper, I will never understand. They spent, is it now $3.2 billion of our stimulus dollars in China to build these meters? Is that the amount, or is it $2.2 billion?
Well, depends on allocated versus spent, but $2.2 billion for PG&E and so on, and about an equivalent amount, roughly, for the other two big electric utilities.
And considering that we're paying for it, not having to have an option about what we have in terms of use, in terms of privacy and safety and environmental concerns about migratory birds, this is really quite outrageous. I do need to take a break now, so stay with us. You are listening to a show called Smart and Unhealthy with Cindy Sage. And I'm Lena Berman. Jeff Fawcett is by. I want to remind you that on April 21st, 2010, in Sebastopol, we will be part of a smart meter forum with PG&E and CPUC representatives. It is, I believe, open to the public. It's a free event. You're welcome to come. It's 5:30 to 7:30, and there will be a link on our website to more information on how to get there. Please stay tuned. We'll come back to our conversation after this.
And got lucky, came upon the shore, found you a conquering America. You spoke of peace, waged a war, while you were conquering America.
Welcome back. This is Your Own Health and Fitness. I'm Lena Berman with Jeff Fawcett, PhD. We're on the phone with Cindy Sage of Sage Associates. We're talking about smart and unhealthy, about the smart meters. There's information about Your Own Health and Fitness, our guests, our book, our practice, our archive, CD copies, lots more at yourownhealthandfitness.org, or visit us on Facebook, either Your Own Health and Fitness or Too Much Medicine, Not Enough Health. Our information number, 707-874-2772, or email us at admin, at yourownhealthandfitness.org, everything spelled out. Please remember, on April 21st, 5:30 to 7:30, Veterans Memorial Hall in Sebastopol, we will be part of a smart meter forum sponsored by Sonoma County. Supervisor Ephraim Carrillo, please come out and join us. There will be information on our website. And let's get back to our discussion with Cindy Sage.
Lena, I just want to thank you and Jeff for doing a show that I think has really monumental importance to people. From the point of view that, you know, we've talked about EMF and radio frequency health issues for many years now together, but I have never seen a case like this, and I'm glad you're highlighting it, where, you know, the government's at the door, and they're telling you that you have no way of avoiding what is essentially a continuous blanket of the probably the most importantly, the most bioactive way of delivering this kind of electropollution to people, and it's happening in their homes. There is no place to go.
Yeah, you can't close your windows.
You can't move. You can't shield. You can't. You really can't.
Why don't you say more about that? About whether you can shield? Because I think people are. Some people are thinking that they will be able to shield. I mean, the fact that we looked into this, but the fact that it's collapsing on your electrical wires and your pipes and, you know.
It's coupling. It's coupling and being carried and re-radiated. Well. The kind of shielding we're thinking about, and we'll probably do this at our house. We'll probably take the meter off the wall of the house, and we'll probably dig a trench in the driveway, and we'll probably have a pedestal mount remote meter. We'll put it out in front by the mailbox, where it can, you know, it'll get people walking by. You know, in a society where we're supposed to walk more because of obesity, people won't want to walk the streets if everybody remotes their meter out front. But I don't know what else to do. And then I'd build a box around it that had radio frequency shielding. And other than
grounded.
I can't control the front, you know, the utility owns the meter, right?
Mm-hmm. It does.
And they can read the front of it fine, but, you know, it'll be shielded so it can't go out the sides, top, or back and get back at our house. But, you know, that what do you do to your neighbors then? You know, what are
well,
your neighbors
and you still have
do
the,
to you?
Well, you still have the wiring problem. It depends on your level of sensitivity.
An RF suppressor, which will do some good.
Yeah, it won't remove it all.
Not all, but it's going to do a lot of good about having this feedback onto your electrical wiring. But it doesn't completely eliminate the problem, and certainly it does nothing about the sort of blanket level of radio frequency we're going to have from the communications, the mesh network, all the antennas around the community. And so we really have to stop here and say, look, we know that, you know, we know that chronic exposure to these things has never really been studied. What we do know from acute studies is it's really bad for people in the long term, and it's bad for thinking and concentration and memory and immune function in the short term. We know better than to do this, certainly where we could do it in a wired fashion, and we wouldn't have those same issues with health. And we're going to get the same overlay with broadband, which is another federal initiative to roll out more wireless in just this global way. And we will be drowning in this. And the levels that are being proposed under these programs, Lena, do not take into account what we already have. There are a lot of people in the world, in this country, in your community, in my community, who already have stuff in their house. They have wireless routers. They have wireless laptops. They have cell and cordless phones. They have decked phones. They have baby monitors. All of those are sources. No one is adding them all together and saying, oops, you're over even the obsolete public health standards or safety standards that we have today.
Less people throw their hands in the air. I just want to make a very important point, which is that this broadband is better delivered with fiber optic, and these companies like Google, these huge monolith companies, are figuring this out and saying, we will deliver lightning fast.
Mm-hmm.
Internet service, so there is hope that the broadband will save us. It's also terribly important for people to be very noisy about this and to get involved, because if there is an overwhelming resistance to this, I think something will happen.
People need a little education or a lot, and they need a voice, and here are two ways. I wrote a briefing letter that put together in the simplest way I could say this, but based on good numbers from the utilities about emissions. I put a briefing letter together that appears on the EMFSafetyNetwork.org website, and I also put up, and the webmaster of that site put up letters. They're called homeowner opt-out letters, and all you have to do is click into that website, find the letter that, you know, who you figure out who you pay your electric bill to, and then choose the right letter, the one that would go to that electric utility, and just click and send it. And it says to them, I don't like this idea. Give me another alternative. I'm not going to comply. I'm not going to use it, and I'm not going to like it, because I don't think you've thought through the alternatives that don't have health effects, and you should. So these are two pieces of material, along with some other very good information about what the Wall Street Journal has had to say about this, the Homeland Security newsletter.
Yeah, they don't like it.
And I mean, you can see a lot of public sentiment about, you know, that's been written. It's not just us, but nationally, people are waking up and saying, this doesn't sound like a good idea. We went out too fast. And remember, these electric utilities, you know, have, you know, they don't really, it's clear from their response in, when we ask them about RF emissions studies, they don't really even understand radio frequency. They understand the old electric and magnetic fields from power line and appliance EMF pretty well, but they don't get the radio frequency, and they don't deal with requests very well. I think they're still learning, and yet they are deploying and exposing us to these things, you know, without thought.
One of the things I think is important to remember is that the Army and the Navy started studying all of the health effects of RF, wireless, all this stuff, early on in the 60s, and the results were distressing. I have a paper, actually, where the Army bombarded an embassy with RF, because initially it was being studied to use as a weapon, because they thought they could incapacitate communities without killing them, basically. And the effects on bombarding, or, you know, doing the kinds of, it's really getting to the kind of levels that we're at, people felt incredibly terrible. They were dizzy. They were nauseous. They couldn't think. Their cognitive function
went down.
They had
crying jags. It affected their limbic systems to the point where they couldn't stop crying.
They couldn't sleep. You know, they were confused. They couldn't function. Now, these studies were all suppressed. I mean, because to this day, the military uses radar, and radar is radio frequency again. And please understand that it's about the frequency. It's not about the intensity or the amount of the exposure. You know, the numbers, oh, well, it's 200 versus 3 million. That's not what's important. It has to do with the type of frequency that you're being exposed to, which is not native to what your body is used to. And, in fact, as
and
I
the modulation, the way that signal is delivered in pulses is
right.
appears to be more bioactive, and that's exactly what these smart meters do, is give a whopping big, sharp jolt.
And as I'm watching hummingbirds feed at this feeder out my window, I'm reminded that migratory birds are horribly affected by this additional layer of radio frequency, because it interferes with their native capacity to read the Earth's magnetic fields. The other thing is that these smart meters can turn your power off remotely. If they don't like the way you're using your power, if you're using too much on peak, if you're not paying your bills timely, they don't have to send somebody out to talk to you. They can just shut you off, which is not nice.
Right. Let me read the quote out of PG&E's January report. It says, an important extension to this project under consideration is the linking of automatic load shedding. That would be us. We are at the load. With automatic circuit reconfiguration. Changing the circuit configuration for automatic service restoration can shift load or initiate load shedding, which may be needed to avoid overloads. You know,
what does that mean?
Well, it seems to mean that, you know, in critical periods, if you're hooked up to the system, you know, in a wireless fashion, they can shed load, which is shed areas rather than having an entire grid go down.
So they can brown you out.
They can brown and black you out both. Or if you don't pay your bill, they can just remotely shut you down and let you come down to the office and prove you paid it. You know, it's quite efficient for them and quite annoying for the consumer to have that kind of invisibility of, you know, you can't even talk to the meter reader when they come to the door because they're not coming anymore.
And there went those jobs.
And there went those jobs, yeah. You know, Lena, I think another really important part of this, and, you know, perhaps to some of the more technical people who may be listening, and they're probably saying to themselves, what's 230,000 microwatts per centimeter square? You know, it's like, you know, people who deal with electrical engineering tend to look askance at this, because these aren't big in terms of watts and so on. But what I want to say is this. When you look at PG&E's own language in reporting about the problems they've created for people with smart meters, They say that just during the second quarter of 2009, PG&E discovered a limited, they say, number of cases of smart meter radio interference with customer electronics, including triggering ground fault circuit interrupters, or GFI units. Now, a GFI is a little protective device that goes on wiring that doesn't let surges come through and protects against fire and shock and so on. It prevents your system in a general way from overload. It just shuts down when too much tries to run through. It's like a little valve in a way, an electronic valve. Well, these meters, in some cases, are producing radio frequency pulses so strong that they're triggering your electrical system's ground fault interrupter, which is a mandatory part of the National Electric Code. Like when the electrician comes to do a renovation at your house or do your wiring, they have to put those in and they have to work. This is a meter that shuts them down. This is a meter that triggers them because the pulses are so high in power. And that should be a huge wake-up call. There may be, I don't know, some percentage of homes, whether they have poor grounding or poor wiring or inadequate gauge of wiring, that are put at risk for residential electric fire and GFI interruption.
Yeah.
Because these pulses are so strong. So this is not trivial. And then don't you have to wonder, I mean, come back to the health. Don't you have to wonder what kind of biologic ground fault interrupter do we have on our nervous systems? Because the nervous system and your circulatory system are nothing but long and juicy antennas inside the body. They act like antennas for induced current and for radio frequency radiation. But we don't have any ground fault interrupters to protect us. So this is really, at this point, the place that we should say, people, if you are listening and if you care about what you're hearing, A, go read the briefing letter. B, think about sending in the homeowner opt-out. And if enough of those go in to get the attention of the California Public Utility Commission and your utility, suddenly customer compliance is the name of the game. Because if enough of us don't want this wireless, their system won't work. They can't afford to pay $2.2 billion and have 3% or 5% compliance from people then putting the power transmitters inside their homes and making the whole system go. So the consumer at the very end of this has very great power if they choose to use it, voice it.
Additionally, if you'd like to participate in a public forum, Jeff Fawcett and I will be representing, along with Cindy Spatt from TURN, will be representing the citizens, in a conversation with the CPUC and two representatives from PG&E in Sebastopol at the Veterans Memorial Hall on April 21st, 2010, from 5:30 to 7:30 p.m. The address and the map and everything will be posted on our website. It's also posted on emfsafetynetwork.org. You're listening to an interview with Cindy Stage. I'm Lena Berman. This is Your Own Health and Fitness. We're talking about the smart grid. There are many, many people that I talk to all the time who just simply deny that there is any health effect to any of this. They just don't think so, despite the fact that many conventional national magazines like GQ and Prevention and, geez, even more of them, there's even some more.
And Harper's Magazine will be coming out in a week with a really stellar and very in-depth look at this. The May issue of Harper's Magazine.
There are people doing articles on electrosensitivity for those who are the 20% of the population that are more sensitive. We find here that the World Health Organization, everyone looks to the World Health Organization, they look to the NIEMS, the National Institute of Environmental Health Science. And then they look to the FCC safety standards. So would you address some of that as well?
Yeah, well, nobody can make a positive assertion of safety or say these levels are safe because there's enough evidence to say they aren't, although not yet proof. But, I mean, the best indicator is that the World Health Organization hasn't finished its RF research yet. We've been waiting for 5 years to see the study where they determine, how risky it is. And in our own country, the National Toxicology Program has been diddling around years, and probably a decade by now, studying this, and they don't have a report out and won't until 2014. So what that says is that these technologies, wireless technologies, are being deployed willy-nilly everywhere before we know whether or not health effects are going to be critical or just bad. We already know they exist. I mean, there's so much evidence now to indicate that this is a problem for the human genome. It is a problem for DNA damage. It's a problem for the immune system. It affects people's cognitive function. It affects cardiac function. I mean, you just go right down.
Blood pressure is one of the big places that I see insomnia and blood pressure rises.
So if we're talking in this, I mean, the real irony to me, Lena, is that, you know, the healthcare package is going to cost a whole lot of money, but some of the savings were ostensibly to come in because we'd have better wireless reporting on medical records. You know, people could be more efficient about, you know, the medical part of records keeping by making it wireless. This is going to it's not going to be a cost savings. It's going to be an expense when you take into account the health effects and the mistakes that will happen, the screw-ups that will happen with wireless in hospitals and medical clinics, because it makes people stupid. It makes them unable to multitask. It makes them unable to think when these levels are chronic and they're pervasive. So, you know, this did not become a part of the conversation in the healthcare bill, although we tried to raise it. And I'm hopeful that, you know, it's not too late to do a mid-course correction here, because the last thing you want is people doing your medical care being mentally confused because they're living in a wireless soup that renders their brain unable to process linear thought.
I actually had a physician's assistant that I see from time to time for exam admit to me that she doesn't function well anymore in the clinic that she's working in because of the wireless is making her feel uncomfortable, that her heart is pounding and she's confused and it's uncomfortable.
So these are all sort of integrated issues, but I think perhaps we've covered my main points of concern, although we didn't concentrate on some of these other, you know, the software, the security, the privacy.
Well, I have another health issue thing here, which is that the naysayers basically are saying a couple of things. One is they're saying this technology is here to stay. There's no going away. They're making new equipment all the time. Everybody wants to be wireless. Who wouldn't want to walk around with their computer outside and do that? I mean, this is great, you know. And there are people who are not aware of having any symptoms at all, although when you actually observe their behavior, they are having symptoms because they're terribly hyper-aroused and anxious and things like that. But people are saying these are new tools. They're not going away. But the truth is that we are learning that there is a limit to how much wireless broadband and how much wireless stuff can be produced, that there's an upper limit of it. And then finally, you know, the ability to use them, it becomes too full and they begin to interfere with each other. Additionally, we've just recently learned that broadband is faster, secure, doesn't have the health effects, mm-hmm. works better with a wired a fiber optic, which is necessary to do wireless as well. So before we add even more satellites to whenever they take a picture of the Earth, they never take a picture of the Earth showing the amount of space junk and mechanical devices that are orbiting the Earth now, the satellites and all that. It looks like bees buzzing around some hive.
It involves first education and public debate. You know, are there problems with the fast and cheap, which is the wireless rollout? Yes. Are there solutions? Yes. Do they cost more? Well, maybe not if you looked at life cycle costs and included the health costs of going wireless, you know, as a part of that package. And if we did that as a society, we wouldn't have these out-of-kilter, you know, budgets that we have where people can't afford insurance and health care. We have to integrate those costs into the decision-making about where and how much wireless we're going to have.
Well, it's a political issue. This is a trespassing issue. This is an issue of people no longer having control over their own environmental exposures.
Yeah. Well, you know, we wouldn't tolerate this if it were smoke, if we could see it. If it were cigarette smoke or if it were, you know, smokestack smoke, we wouldn't tolerate it. We could photograph it. We could publicize it. There would be laws passed, you know, for pollution cleanup. And we did that in the 60s, 70s, and 80s, and 90s. But because this is invisible to other than those few that have meters and can make it audible, it's tough for people to understand sometimes why they feel so bad in certain environments. You can just say, you can say this, call AAA and ask them where in your city they have dead zones now where their cars won't start with automatic ignitions, that, you know, the wireless ignitions. Those are areas that are so burdened by radio frequency already that the signal from your starter can't get to your, through your car to start your car. AAA will send out a truck and they'll haul you away a few blocks or a mile or two until you're out of that radio frequency saturation zone and your car will start up fine. The analogy can be drawn to people.
What was the point in your research, since, you know, we've been talking about this for almost 12 years, what was the point for you? Because you're a scientist and you use a lot of equipment and, you know, you're exposed to a lot of this stuff. You use it all yourself. What was the point where you kind of went, okay, there's no question in my mind about the health effects now? What was the what tripped it off for you?
You know, it has to be a combination. You know, the hundredth monkey maybe. It's the realization that from every point of view in your professional and personal life, you see these things are now linked, and you simply can't turn off that flow of information, and it comes in very poignantly from people with electrosensitivity. Particularly when I worked in Europe more, they have been saturated longer than we have, and there are more heavy users there than we have been. And you see not just the old people or the middle-aged people, but the young people that are so impaired and cannot live normal lives. And then you look at all of the health studies with a very dispassionate eye, and you see layer and layer and layer and layer and layer of scientific work well done, replicated around the world in different labs by credible independent scientists. So these things join together to make you realize that you are seeing the bodies in the street. When you look around and you see young people today that have the dents in the head, they've already had a brain surgery or an acoustic neuroma surgery because they started on their cell phones when they were preteens, that's the kind of future I'm seeing now and you're seeing now. And I think that these mid-course corrections are not impossible to make. I really believe we'll have a little wireless, but we'll have a lot more of something else in our future because we won't be able to afford the cost of not doing so. And if there is ever a good link, we don't have it yet, but a good link between this exposure and autism, we will be home. Or between breast cancer, we will be home.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, because The papers are published, the theories are there in the journal Medical Hypotheses. We know how it might work. We just don't know that it does yet.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, we have to leave it there. I'm very grateful for your time today. I want to thank you very much. It's Cindy Sage, who is co-editor of the Bioinitiative Report at bioinitiative.org, if you want to read those 14 papers. As always, this was an amazing interview. Thank you so much.
Lena, it's 2,000 papers in 11 science chapters in 650 pages of science. The
bioinitiative.org.
Thanks so much.
Thank you. And a reminder that if you want to participate in a forum organized by Sonoma County Supervisor Ephraim Carrillo, but really open to anybody who wants to come, we will be there representing citizens with Mindy Spad of TURN in debating the smart meter system with representatives from PG&E, and I understand they're sending some heavy hitters, and the CPUC. It's Wednesday, April 21st, 2010, 5:30 to 7:30 p.m., Sebastopol Veterans Memorial Hall. It's linked on our website, yourownhealthandfitness.org. I want to thank you all for listening. I'm Lena Berman. There's information about Your Own Health and Fitness, our guests, our book, our practice, our archive, CDs, lots more, yourownhealthandfitness.org. You can also email us at admin@yourownhealthandfitness.org with everything spelled out. Your Own Health and Fitness, produced by Lena Berman and Jeff Fawcett, PhD. And remember, being informed not only protects your health, it protects your freedom.